I'm Marty Moscoen. Our guest, Brianna Wu, is a video game developer who fled her home recently after receiving death threats. She had been public about the harassment of women in the gaming industry and a critic of the group known by the hashtag Gamergate. That is a scary part of a fight that broke out this summer about the treatment of women in gaming and charges of unethical journalists who covered the industry. It is a complicated and convoluted story that has revealed a dark and disturbing side of video gaming. We have three guests who have joined us, including Brianna Wu. As I said, she's an American video game developer. She founded Giant Space Cat. That's an indie development studio in Boston, Massachusetts. Brianna, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Chris Grant. He's with us here in our Philadelphia studio. He's the editor-in-chief of Polygon.com, which is owned by Vox Media. Chris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And joining us by telephone, Noah Berlatsky. He's a contributing writer for The Atlantic, edits the online comics and culture website called The Hooded Utilitarian. And I love that name. Noah, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
Brianna, let me begin with you and begin with the kind of threats that you have lived under, you and your husband have lived under in the last, couple of months, couple of weeks. When did it all start?
It's only been 18 days. This has been some of the hardest 18 days of my life by far.
And I've read some of the death threats, some of the language we can't use on the radio.
Yeah.
But just how virulent have they been there? How pointed have they been?
I mean, at this point, I'm sending further death and rape threats to the police so often, I'm worried that I'm going to annoy them at a certain point. This is an ongoing harassment campaign, and I would just want to say that the reason I spoke out about this in the first place is because Gamergate has been targeting my friends in the industry. Actually, one of the first people they targeted was a former writer for Polygon, Samantha Allen, my friend. Yeah, they harassed her to the point she quit the industry, which is why I've been so vocal in speaking up about this. For that, I've received death threats and have had to flee my home.
And are there specific, I'm just curious about the kind of specific criticisms that you have had that you think have led to these death threats, which of course are completely out of bounds.
Sure. Well, my overall criticism of Gamergate, it's very straightforward. Gamergate says it's about ethics and journalism. This has been debunked by every single major journalistic institution in the industry at this point. What it's really about is harassing women, and specifically women that speak up for representation of women in the video game industry, whether that's on the consumer side, meaning characters in games, or women that are developers. So, anyone that speaks up about this is going to be criticized very roughly by these people. And that's specifically what I've been objecting to. It seems like a movement that specifically targets women. They're simply trying to get more equality in this industry, which is very male-dominated.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Chris. And as I said in my introduction, it's a complicated, convoluted story. And as Brianna said, having to do with these charges of ethical or unethical coverage of the gaming industry, mm-hmm. and also this about women in gaming as well. How do you see this controversy?
It's Brianna said it was really simple, and I think in some ways it is, but I think it's also super convoluted. And I think there's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions. At the root of it, the way that we've taken to covering it is covering actions, not words. So they say a lot of things.
And who is they when we talk
they
about
They would be anybody,
Gamergate.
And this is part of the problem. They is anyone that uses the hashtag.
Right. The hashtag Gamergate.
Inclusion in this club is 10 characters long in a tweet. That's it. Like, that's not a very exclusive club. And so they end up employing this logical fallacy, no true Scotsman. When you point out awful things happening in the hashtag, they say, well, that's not us. That's not real Gamergate. That's somebody else. And it's impossible, right? It's impossible to actually divine intention there. So what we've taken to doing is really looking at what they've accomplished. And if they say it's about ethics and journalism, which to Brianna's point has been debunked since day one, then have they accomplished anything in terms of rooting this out? It's been a 2-month campaign. If the corruption is as rampant and widespread, you think there would be some culpability there. And the media, as anyone who works in the media, our competitors would be happy to illustrate our shortcomings. They would, I think, probably enjoy that. The mainstream media, New York Times, whatever, they would love to point out those shortcomings, right? They spend a lot of effort on their own ethical expectations. So the fact that nobody's come up with anything in months, but what we have had is this ongoing campaign of harassment.
Absolutely. And I do want to get back to that, but the journalism part is this charge or this allegation about the too close relationship between developers, between companies and the journalists who cover them.
Yep. And I think that there are legitimate concerns about ethics in games journalism in general, any trade journalism, which games journalism is. What they've focused on is a perceived impropriety of relationships between developers and journalists, not just big developers, right? Developers with a lot of money, but indie developers, small developers that don't have any money. So they had targeted Zoe Quinn previously, and then a lot of Gamergate kicked off.
And that kind of started this whole thing, right?
Right, with an ex-boyfriend who published a kind of angry screed. And that was immediately, on day one, turned into a campaign about ethics and journalism. Basically, it was, look, we can't go out there and say this is about women, so it's about this other thing.
So you see that as a cover?
Yeah, I think it's a cover. And, you know, their accusation was that she slept with a video game journalist at one of our competitors, Kotaku, in exchange for a review that never happened. Mm. And so instead of, like, focusing on things that I think really are pernicious in our industry, they're focusing on this one little thing that everyone's, like, you know, another freelance writer who left the industry, a friend of mine, Jen Frank, she wrote a piece for The Guardian and wanted to disclose contributing to a friend's Patreon, which is part of what this is all about. And The Guardian's ethics panel basically said, like, that's not worthy of disclosure.
Oh, right? Interesting.
That blunts the efficacy of our real disclosures.
No, let me get you in on the conversation. And I guess we're using you as a sort of our big picture guy. How do you see this hashtag Gamergate?
Well, I don't know that I'm a big picture person. I'm somebody who's not a gamer, but who's, I write about sort of related issues in comics. And to me, you know, the Gamergate, I mean, the issue seems similar to some things which have happened in comics earlier, which is, there's a struggle over what's, I mean, there's kind of a struggle in that there's one kind of game which is very popular. You know, there's kind of, which would kind of be pulp, right? There's sort of pulp shooter games, which are the most popular, and then there's, there's smaller games which are more interested in focusing on games as art, like Zoe Quinn's Depression Quest.
Right.
And people who are into the pulp feel very threatened, apparently, by the possibility that there might be other games or games for other people, or that games might be seen in a different way. And what I read about in The Atlantic is, that happened with comics several decades ago, and is to some extent still ongoing, where, you know, comics were basically defined by superheroes, and there was an effort to make people more aware of different kinds of comics, or, you know, art comics in the 70s and 80s. And it was very contentious. I mean, there were, there wasn't the internet, so there wasn't this sort of crowdsourced anger, but Gary Groth, who created the Comics Journal and wrote in the Comics Journal and was pushing for comics to be art, I mean, there were huge feuds and fights around that within the industry.
Were there death threats, though?
There were not death threats. And I think that, in part that's because there wasn't the internet in the same way. But in part I think it's because these issues have overlapped with questions about diversity in games. When Gary Groth was pushing for comics as art, he supported many female creators, but he was not. I mean, the main was R. Crumb, who's, you know, a white guy. I mean, he was sort of the center of the canon, and he's a white guy whose representation of women is not necessarily better than the people in the Cape comics. So there wasn't that sort of overlap of fandom and issues of misogyny or racism the way that there is in this case, I mean, comics has its own push for diversity with people like Gail Simone and Trina Robbins. I mean, that's been contentious, but again, there hasn't been the same kind of overlap, and I think as a result, it hasn't been as explosive.
Brianna, let me go back to you, though, and yes. Even going back to, I mean, what do you want? If I can put it in such a simple term, but, I mean, you've been a critic of some of these games, you're a developer yourself. What are you looking for in the gaming industry?
So I think that's a great question. And to answer, I need to back up a little bit and look at this issue from just a little bit higher. You know, I became a gamer in 1985 when my parents got me Nintendo Entertainment System. And for most of my life, games have been a kind of boys' club. You know, I think the average person outside of the games industry can look at video games and understand they're not really a medium that's friendly to women. So what you've had my whole life is kind of games made by men, marketed to men, you know, kind of centered towards men's tastes. And what we're seeing now is there's been an explosion of women that have gotten into gaming with the iPhone. You know, women as of right now are 48% of gamers. This is a huge shift in the industry. So what you're seeing is there used to be game journalism enterprises like IGN, which specifically on their corporate page says, we are a website for men. This is an institution that covers video games. What you've seen in the last 5 years is institutions like Polygon coming forward that have a broader taste. One of the reasons I enjoy reading Polygon is they do stories about how the game industry represents women, and they basically have a wider audience shift there. So what the consequence of that is, are these people that tend to be gamer gators are very, very, very threatened by this idea. They feel like games are theirs. They feel like they own games. They want games to stay exactly the way that they are. So what I want from the industry is extremely straightforward. I want for more women to be hired by video game industries, to be journalists about video games, to be, you know, CEOs of game development companies, so we can have our voices out there and you won't see this huge disconnect between the 48% of women that are playing games and the people that are actually marketing, reviewing, developing the games.
Well, let's hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Brianna Wu. She's a video game developer. She founded Giant Space Cat. That's an indie development studio based in Boston, Massachusetts. She has been harassed by people that associate themselves with the hashtag Gamergate. Chris Grant, also with us, editor-in-chief of Polygon.com. And Noah Berletsky edits the online comics and culture website, The Hooded Utilitarian. We want to hear from you. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
The Catholic Foundation of Greater Philadelphia supports WHYY. The Catholic Foundation helps support the needs of the entire community with its Helping Hands Fund. The fund works to find new approaches to feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, and bring new opportunities to those who are struggling. More information is available at 215-587-5650 or online at catholicfoundationphila.org. 215-587-5650 or catholicfoundationphila.org.
Fox Chase Cancer Center is a proud supporter of WHYY. One of the newest advances in the fight against cancer is immunotherapy, a treatment that unleashes your body's own immune system so it can better fight cancer cells. Early results from studies at Fox Chase Cancer Center and other cancer centers show promise, even in patients who did not respond to other treatments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, part of Temple Health, your first choice in cancer care.
The Wilma Theater supports WHYY and presents Gina Gianfrido's comedy about messy relationships, Rapture, Blister, Burn. When celebrity professor Catherine reunites with her best friends from graduate school, she begins to rethink the choices she's made over the past 20 years and looks at how much or little the lives of women have evolved over the past century. Rapture Blister Burn is extended at the Wilma through November 8th, with Wilma Wintix subsidized tickets available through November 2nd. For tickets, 215-546-7824 or wilmatheater.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about the hashtag Gamergate and a fight that essentially broke out this summer involving video game enthusiasts, some game developers, critics, feminists, journalists, about the treatment of women in the industry, about the coverage of the industry, and again talking with Chris Grant, Brianna Wu, and Noah Berlatsky, and again taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And do send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. So Chris, and we were talking, we have the advantage of talking during the break, so this is sort of guys putting a sign up that says no girls allowed?
I think,
at their treehouse or something?
I think we actually ran a feature called No Girls Allowed
about
some of this stuff. But the I think part of it is a concern or maybe a frustration with what they perceive as political correctness with progressive voices entering what for a long time has been what I think they would consider a safe space, right? The default, the normal, which they would call it, has been white dudes. And like they're comfortable
white
with that.
White dudes playing...
White dudes in their games. Right, white dudes represented in games, white dudes playing it.
And are these violent games?
A lot of them, yeah.
Okay.
And I think, you know, we can talk about what this says about gaming and sort of my worry as a gamer and as a journalist, and as somebody who thinks that gaming is a legitimate art form, which is that there's been a stereotype for a long time of boys in their basement playing games, a sort of violent loner. And now, after a Supreme Court victory, right, freedom of speech established, more tools, more artistic games coming out, more challenging games. We are kind of, you know, there's this retrograde effort to apply the role of violent misogynist now to it. And I think, like, the fact that I'm here on this call talking about Gamergate, I was on the media talking about Gamergate, New York Times put it on the front page. It's hitting a mainstream level because it helps, in some ways, reinforce an existing negative stereotype of gamers, which is that this
these
has always
guys in
been
the basement.
Here. But that's actually not true. I think, you know, the Gamergate itself is a very small audience. They make a lot of noise through the amplification of social media, but this is a small group. And inside that small group, the really pernicious parts of it are a much, much smaller part. And so you have a very small number of people who are able to make a lot of noise and able to do a lot of damage with the sort of, I think, perspective of they're defending something. They are warriors. And they've kind of enlisted all these people into their cause, people who might be ignorant, who might be misled, who think it's about something else. It's about ethics and journalism. And so they think they are fighting on the side of good. They've got the good words, ethics and journalism, important. But it's really a mask for these other kind of bad apples, these bad actors, to go and do the things they're doing, like Brianna.
Well, and to you, Noah, I mean, obviously, if we're talking about the internet, yes, maybe it's a small group of people with what appears to be, at least now or temporarily, a pretty big megaphone. And also, if we're talking with Brianna, who had to flee her house, I mean, threatening people with death and rape and all sorts of horrible things like that. I mean, this is also criminal, at least in my book.
Sure. I mean, obviously, the police are involved.
Right.
Threatening people is illegal. I mean, I think I was gonna just to talk briefly about what he was saying about stereotypes of gamers. I mean, you know, the stereotypes of comics users are comics readers are very similar, right? Sort of stunted adolescent white guys in their basements who haven't moved out of their house. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's not just that it's a small group of, you know, I mean, like, I don't think that applies to either comics readers or gamers.
Apparently not to gamers.
I mean, the idea that the people who are, the idea that misogyny comes out of people who are sort of, like, failing at adulthood, right? I don't think that's really true, because, I mean, like, you know, you don't need to be sort of living in your mother's basement to be awful and misogynist, right? I mean, like, misogyny is something that's a problem throughout the culture, you know, not just among gamers, though obviously this particular stunted or problematic in some way that other groups maybe aren't.
Let me just jump in here. I'm looking at something that Lee Alexander wrote. I guess it was a piece titled "Games Are Over," talking about games is the games culture is a petri dish of people who know so little about how human social interaction and professional life works that they can concoct online wars about social justice or game journalism ethics straight face and cause genuine human consequences because of video games. To you, Brianna, and you said about half of gamers are women or female. So how do we understand, perhaps the stereotype comes up against reality, but nonetheless, you know, obviously Lee Alexander trying to make a point as well.
Sure, and I want to say about that piece, Lee Alexander is my friend. I personally thought that piece was, I thought it was unhelpful. And let me tell you why.
Sure.
I grew up in Mississippi, which is a state that even today is really dealing with some problems with race relations and, you know, sexism and things like that. What I saw over and over and over again growing up are people in Mississippi that felt like their culture and identity was under attack. You know, they just wanted to go to church, they wanted to believe what they wanted to believe, and they felt like their identity was under attack. I think in that same way, we have gamers that feel like their identity is under attack by women like myself.
Right.
I want to be very clear. I am fine with there being bro shooters or, you know, games with very sexually explicit depictions of women like Dead or Alive. What I advocate is very straightforward. I want more women in games so we can add our voices and we can have games that appeal to all of us. But it's that piece by Lee Alexander, which, again, I just want to stress she's my friend. But the consequence of that is you have these people that have felt bullied and like the underdog their entire life. And it feeds into this wildfire because they are legitimately scared. And I want to say out there, for people even that agree with me, I think it's really important to understand and have compassion for these gamergators because they do, it is true, it is emotionally true that they feel like their identity is under attack. What's truly unfortunate is that in feeling like that identity is under attack, I feel like they're very misogynistic in ways they don't understand. I think they're very quick to, you know, count women like myself as the enemy. And I think they're very quick to not want to hear any criticism. And what this has risen to is a wildfire that is literally threatening the entire industry. I want to be very clear about something. I know a lot of women in the game development industry. I know journalists, I know female journalists, I know female developers. I do not have a single day where I don't get dozens of letters from women that they are terrified by Gamergate and what's going on. We are scared, we are exhausted, and the ones that really break my heart are the girls, frankly, that they're in school to learn how to be game developers or they want to develop their own games one day. Because again, we're 48% of players nowadays. And the stakes of this are so high because if we do not address this as an industry, we are going to lose an entire generation of women that just are not going to go into a field where you get this amount of, frankly, harassment. You know, death threats, rape threats on a daily basis, this kind of anger coming at you 24/7, why would anyone do that job? I mean, I'm a software engineer. I spend my days very happily sitting in my computer writing code. You know, that is what I love to do. Dealing with this harassment, you know, I'm not a media figure. It's extremely difficult for us.
And that's Brianna Wu. She's a video game developer. And as she has told us during this hour and has written about, she's gotten death threats, rape threats. Noah Berlatsky edits an online comics and culture website. And Chris Grand is editor-in-chief of Polygon.com. We are talking about this thing called Gamergate, or goes by the hashtag Gamergate. And it's pits what appears to be video game enthusiasts, game developers, critics, feminists, and journalists into this pretty ugly at times fight about video games, who plays them, what they should feature, and That's what we're talking about. As I said, this is complicated. That's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. And again, we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Chris, what is the industry doing about Gamergate, if anything?
The development industry, the publishing industry?
Yes.
Not much. The ESA, which is the sort of trade and lobbying group that represents the big publishers, issued a statement condemning harassment and saying we need more women in development, which was great. They didn't use the term Gamergate by name. They avoided that, which is, seems to be it's a very specific choice, right, to say we condemn harassment, which is like, yeah. I mean,
shouldn't we all,
everyone
right?
Everyone does, I hope. But not linking to it, I think, is problematic for a lot of reasons. The companies are desperate. I mean, just out of their mind desperate that this goes away.
Because it's hurting the industry. As Brianna says, it's hurting the industry.
It's toxic for sure. And they want it to disappear. We're going into Q4. We have a Call of Duty game coming out in a week. Like, they want to talk about games, how great they are, how fun they are. Go buy this new one. Spend all your money. They don't want to talk about, oh, get another female game developer has been harassed, or right, another death threat. So the AAA industry, right, which has been making these games primarily marketed to men, they're desperate for this to disappear. And I think the AAA industry has also been increasingly open about a lot of the accusations of sexism and misogyny in the industry. You know, Anita Sarkeesian is an academic
She called off a talk that she was going to give in Utah.
But she's also given talks at places like Bungie, which is the developer behind the new game Destiny, right? She's been invited to talk to major developers because what she's saying is meaningful and creators want to hear it. And so the worry is that as these voices start to get heard, as they start to make a dent, the pushback has gotten so overwhelming that, to Brianna's point, like, the worry is that we stop hearing those voices.
Anything you want to add to that, Noah? I'm just thinking again from your experience with comics and the sort of pop culture. Any thoughts you want to add to what we've just been talking about?
Well, just to talk about Anita Sarkeesian. I mean, one of the things. I mean, the way that the issue of ethics in games journalism. I mean, when I've talked to people on the Gamergate tag, the way that it sort of overlaps with sort of things like Anita Sarkeesian's criticism is, again, there's I think that a lot of or at least people on the Gamergate tag that I've talked to, I mean, there seems to be a resistance to treating games as art, and that comes out in that what they sort of talk about in terms of what they want, objective criticism, they often say. So there's this idea that you can have criticism somehow that doesn't actually talk about content at all, so that it's just about gameplay, right? They want reviews that are just talking about how the games work, right? It would be like a review of a movie that just talked about whether it's like the special effects were convincing,
as opposed to the storyline or character development
as opposed to talking about, you know, whether the story, you know, is what the story means. So there's this this idea that ethics in games journalism means not talking about content, and that sort of goes into misogyny, and that any discussion of sort of gender roles or of diversity, or of really, you know, what the game, or of violence in the game, you know, of how the violence is used, is seen as prejudiced and illegitimate, and that, you know, so that's both, you know, this game should be treated like, you know, it should be treated like a consumer review, right? And so any sort of discussion of aesthetic qualities, which includes, you know, gender roles, is seen as illegitimate. And I think that that's a lot of how you get from you get this idea that you can talk, that ethics in games journalism somehow is opposed to treating games as art or to some sort of feminist critique.
Let me go back to you, Brianna, and and this is something that Chris has said, and Noah has underscored this, the idea of video games as art. And I think for those people that either don't play it or have a very negative view about video games, that would be probably a revelation for them to hear something like that. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I see a lot of these people as having their cake and wanting to eat it too. I think it was 4 years ago, Roger Ebert very famously said that video games are not art. And every single person I know in the games industry was very upset about that.
Imagine.
Players, consumers, everyone writing him, like saying, oh, play Flower, play this. This is art. Yet, at the same time, when Anita Sarkeesian comes out with videos that critique, video games as an art form, saying like, well, let's look at how they treat women and mm-hmm. let's use examples. Those same players do not want to hear it. So it's they want to have their cake and they want to eat it too. And I think this feeds very well into the new, what I would call the new form of journalism. There was a game that comes out, I think it's today, it's Sunset Overdrive. And I think it's really, really illustrative to look at how different outlets covered this game. So one of the key features of this game, Sunset Overdrive, is that you can create a character that is male, female, pretty, ugly, larger, skinnier. You can create a character that is you. And they went out of their way to do this. I would call it one of the key features of the game. If you look at what I would call the older school games journalism, like IGN, for instance, they barely touch this because they know it's going to upset their readers. They kind of stay out of that social commentary. If you look at Polygon and other reviews, they actually have a pull quote there talking about how like one of the best features of the game is you can create a character that you identify with. Mm. This is the new form of journalism that kind of looks at this and how it affects everyone, not just the assumed straight, white, male player. And I think that wider view is an eminently fair critique.
Do you agree? About a minute before our break here, Chris, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at things like Sunset Overdrive, they're recognizing that these other people have been here the whole time, right? I think a lot of people feel like maybe women are imposters, right? They're here to take something away. They're here to invade. When in fact, they've actually been here the whole time. They haven't been given a voice, to Brianna's point. She's been playing it since 1985. Maybe it hasn't been as many, right? So from a market standpoint, okay, there's an argument to be made there. You're getting very small now. But when games like Sunset Overdrive recognize that there's a lot of people play games, somebody in my Twitter feed said it's the first game he's had where his player could wear a turban. Right? And he was happy about that. Like, he could finally have somebody that looks like him. That's a big deal. And it's not a big deal because I think video games are art and they should be more inclusive. I would say even selfishly, as a journalist that runs a website, it's a big deal. I want more readers. I want more people to play games and love them. It's a big deal externally. So that stereotype that we still have about gamers starts to get eroded away.
Let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Christopher Grant, editor-in-chief of Polygon.com, Brianna Wu, a video game developer, and Noah Berlatsky, edits the online comics and culture website, The Hooded Utilitarian. And we got a bunch of callers that want to join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Winter Tour presents the 51st Annual Delaware Antique Show, November 7th through 9th at the Chase Center on the riverfront in Wilmington, Delaware, featuring 62 dealers specializing in American antiques and decorative arts. Highlights include a special lecture by Jessica Fellows, author and niece of Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellows. Delaware Antique Show details and tickets are available at 800-448-3883 or wintertour.org. Winter Tour proudly supports WHYY.
Westtown School supports WHYY. Westtown believes that students and their parents deserve a school that offers academic rigor and an uncommon level of connection. You can learn more about Westtown's acclaimed programs and 600-acre campus by attending their open house on Sunday, November 2nd at 1 p.m. Details at westtown.edu. Westtown is a Quaker, college prep, pre-K through 12th grade day and boarding school in Westchester. Westtown School proudly supports WHYY.
The Association of Delaware Valley Independent Schools, ADVIS, proudly supports WHYY. There are many independent private schools in the greater Delaware Valley. Each offers a combination of nurture and academic challenge, arts, social diversity, community service, connected learning, and critical thinking. To learn more, it's advis.org. ADVIS. Independent schools produce independent people.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about this thing called hashtag Gamergate. Again, Chris Grant and Brianna Wu and Noah Berletsky are guests. And I want to just read a couple of this is a tweet that we have. How do we get that part of the gamer community not in league with the abusive misogynist part to step up and stop this nonsense? Brianna Wu, that's clearly in your court.
Sure. You know, something I've been talking about forever is, you know, the need for male allies. You know, the truth is, when I speak up on this, I can be a leader. I can, you know, go to conferences. I can talk about this at PAX, PAX East, GDC, wherever. But the truth is, we need men to stand with us and to call this behavior out as peers. Because the truth is, when a man says to another man, hey, that's not acceptable, you know, harassing that woman, knock it off. It comes across in a very, very different way. So what I would call upon is, you know, if you are a gamer and you just very selfishly want all of us to get back to being able to play games, which is what I want, you know, I would say just speak out on this when you see your friends doing it. I would also, I really want to stress something here. You know, it is absolutely factual that the death and rape threats that you know, I got and many other women in the industry have gotten are horrible and wrong. But I really would like the gamers out there to understand the thing that hurts me most that I get in this industry is the men that constantly question, undermine, negate, and show up to argue against my lived experiences. As if, you know, me being a woman in this industry is something for them to debate the reality of. So, you know, Anita Sarkeesian had a fantastic quote: the most radical thing you could do when women tell you about their experiences is to believe them. Huh. And that's absolutely true. And I would just ask any of the gamers out there, journalists, what we need for you to do is to add more women in tech and in games to your lives and just listen to these voices. Because what sadly happens far too often is we try to tell you what we're experiencing in this industry, which is very, very, very male dominated. And we're simply shouted down.
Chris, you agree with Brianna when she says that, you know, if a man tells another man to knock it off,
I think in some
ways,
have
some influence?
You know, probably not very wisely, didn't wade into the Gamergate debate for a long time. And when we finally did, I wrote a letter to the from the editor last Friday, I want to say. No, it was actually over a week ago. So it took a while. In large part, I think journalistically, I was very hesitant to kind of lump everyone in with this kind of chaotic noise. But as the signal from noise started becoming, you know, even clearer than it had been for a while, the major reason I hopped in is because silence was perceived as support. And I don't think, I mean, we were kind of at the target of a lot of Gamergate concerns, but the idea that not saying something could be construed as support, I found really kind of vulgar. So we wrote a letter and, you know, a lot of other outlets did as well, but I think she's dead on that. I still see people tweeting to their heroes, tweeting to authors they love or celebrities and saying, hey, you know, what do you think about this Gamergate thing? And if they reply back negatively, there's a lot of like, there's some schadenfreude there, but like it's, people are, they're losing their heroes as they find more and more people who don't support or condone it. And like speaking out against it, I think is very important.
Let me get, looks like Sarge from Philadelphia to join us. And no, I'll put this to you, Sarge, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. I was calling because I wanted to kind of recognize or suggest that this is part of a larger conversation, and not to diminish the virulent misogyny that is happening with the whole Gamergate thing, but the same type of people who are attacking female developers who are being challenged by a more inclusive, you know, sex and gender-based sort of experience in gaming are the same people who are resistant or reluctant to acknowledge or accept greater diversity in terms of race, greater diversity in terms of sexual orientation. They're threatened by it. If you, I mean, somebody mentioned IGN a while back.
Right.
If you read any of the comments on IGN, if it brings up homosexuality, if it brings up more diversity, the things of women. If you go to those comments, that type of virulent resistance is there. And I think this is a reflection of privilege. The irony, though, with this privilege and white male privilege, straight white male privileges, these are the same people who, you know, 20 years ago when I was, you know, in my 20s, would have said, hey, you know, well, I'm on the outside, I'm on the fringes, and now seeing these behaviors happening from this group of people is very ironic, but I think it's part of a larger conversation.
No, I hear you, Sarge. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Noah, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, sure. I mean, I think that issues of diversity in various art forms of various kinds are, you know, I mean, the Internet has sort of, the Internet in some ways has made feminist discussions of art a lot more visible. But it's also, you know, I mean, it's kind of made, you know, MRA communities, men's rights activists,
mm-hmm.
Are a lot more visible. You know, I mean, it's a way to, I mean, it is a way to sort of like, sort of crowdsource political engagements of various sorts. So there's that. I mean, you also get, you know, I mean, I was thinking about the Fantastic Four movie, right, where they cast Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm. Michael B. Jordan is black, and a lot of people were very resistant to that. You know, which, I mean, again, it's kind of both, it's both about fandom, and it's about, you know, people who are uncomfortable with race in some ways. I mean, you know,
but is it? I mean, and perhaps, Rihanna, I'll put this to you. I mean, is it also just about sort of growing up, if I can put it that way? I mean, the Internet is relatively new. You do see it's been slow, but you see more diversity on television. You know, depending on how broadly you go to the movies, there is more diversity there. Whether this is just part of the, in a sense, a growing up process, and yes, it's painful and ugly at times.
You know, my friend Samantha Allen, she wrote a fantastic piece about this for Daily Beast. And what she said was, this is a very interesting time to be a woman in technology, or, you know, just a feminist in general. So what we see is, it's true that the Internet and Twitter has allowed us to get our voices heard more than ever before. You know, I know for myself, my own understanding, my views on feminism and equality have really gotten deeper over the last 4 years. And I think that's very beneficial. I think it lets, you know, people on all sides hear these arguments, and I think it helps us grow as a society. The dark side is that very often we discover technology and then we find out the social consequences of it. So what we're seeing now is women are being targeted and harassed like never before. And I want to be very clear about something. Gamergate is an organized campaign. You can go to Reddit, you can go to 4chan, or you can go to 8chan, and you can see them actually planning these harassment campaigns against us. So I think, like, it's good because we hear our voices heard. I think it's bad that, you know, women like myself, you know, experience unprecedented levels of harassment. You know, Newsweek did a story this weekend that analyzed my tweets versus, you know, journalists in the game industry. You know, they say it's ostensibly about ethics, but let's look at the outcome. Let's look at what they're doing. And what they found is, if you add me and Anita Sarkeesian together, we receive more anger and harassment than all journalists in the industry that they looked at combined. And, you know, that's very frightening for us just speaking up on these issues.
And just to add a number to that, is something like 40,000 tweets directed at you, Brian.
Yeah, it's been really hard for me. I don't mind telling you. Being at the center of this harassment campaign is one of the hardest things I've ever done. And the reason I chose to stand up here, I'm asked a lot why I went public.
Sure.
The reason I stood up to these people is because being silent about what happens to us, being silent about the death threats, the rape threats, the constant harassment, the belittling of our opinions, it's not working. We are losing women in this industry like triage. There is a mob that has learned they can go after Samantha Allen, they can go after Jen Frank, they can go after Maddie Bryce. And the idea is they target something they say and they harass until the woman just chooses to leave. And I knew if I didn't stand up to these people that have been targeting my friends one by one, this was going to continue. And I cannot stress the personal cost that this has had to me. You know, there are threads on 8chan and Reddit and 4chan every single day that do nothing but attack Brianna, you know, tell people what a horrible person I am. You know, it's awful. Especially when all I'm trying to do is to stand up and get these people to stop harassing my friends.
Apparently, this is from our producers, several tweets and emails are asking about the harassment that has been waged against gamers as a result of this. Chris, do you want to take that?
So, it's hard to tell. We actually have a reporter working on a story on it now, but there's a kind of counter-programming of, you know, well, you say this, we're being attacked even more. And you know, it's you say it's about misogyny. Well, it's about ethics and journalism. So there's a lot of like counter programming. I think everyone would say very clearly, look, we don't think harassment's a good idea. Right. Like, that's not cool. Nobody's condoning it. If there's people who are harassing gamers, that sucks also. But again, when you start separating signal from noise, Brianna's got 43,000 tweets targeted at her, right? Like, she's got real cause for alarm, and at least in my admittedly, you know, narrow field of vision, you know, you can't really see into Gamergate very well. It doesn't seem to be reproduced on the other side. Have people been harassed? Like, I'm sure I believe them. Yeah, okay. But it's different when you are taking up arms voluntarily, right? When you're wading into a war that you create, and then people come after you, and it's like, I mean, it's weird. You know, it's like you don't want to say that it's their fault, but it's also a kind of problem of their own choosing. I think everyone just wants in a way, a de-escalation here.
Oh, yeah.
And the de-escalation involves in, like, accepting that some of the things that, you know, let's say the moderate Gamergaters believe, corruption in games journalism, isn't there. So you need to accept that. And then the more radicalized parts need to accept that, you know, voices like Brianna's aren't going anywhere. And Polygon's not going to go anywhere.
And maybe it's something to say or something to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, you'd listen. But even if you don't want to listen, at least stop shouting people down. Right? Like, Call of Duty is going to come out and everyone's going to like it. It's going to be great.
Right. And we know that.
I'm looking forward to it.
You know, Chris talks about some de-escalating thing. And again, I'm wondering, just, you know, drawing from your experience with comics, you know, how do you think this gets de-escalated, if indeed it does, or if it just sort of goes away because people are sort of burned out on it?
Well, you know, I mean, with comics, over time there became comics as art got more accepted, and, you know, Cape Comics didn't disappear. And, I mean, there's still, you know, sort of some animosity between groups who like those things, but overall there's kind of, you know, I mean, everybody's got material they want or are interested in, so, you know, the panic turned out to not really be necessary, and so it's been de-escalated. You know, but again, that didn't really involve the same kinds of issues around misogyny and diversity that are here, and you know, comics was also very small. I mean, one of the things that's happened with Gamergate that's maybe most disturbing is that there are people, you can see these opportunists who don't really care that much about games per se, like Christina Hoff Summers, or Milo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Hannah.
Sort of weighing in on this controversy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, these are people who are culture warriors. Right. I mean, they have a stake in, they have a stake in fighting against liberalism, basically, or against what they see as, you know, progressivism, or sometimes just in kind of, you know, getting worrisome sign, right? Because if you've got people whose interest is in the controversy rather than in the games themselves, it's hard to see where the de-escalation comes, because suddenly you've got this, you've got a bunch of people who are you've got a bunch of people institutionalizing themselves who are interested in the fight and who are way more interested in, who are way more interested in having people being at each other's throats than they are in the next game coming out or in talking about games as art. So.
Yeah, and I'm jumping in here only because, Brianna, I want to give you the last word about 45 seconds before I have to end this hour. Mm-hmm. What final thoughts do you want to leave our listeners?
I think I would sadly say that, you know, Gamergate is not a phenomenon that's going to go away. I think for us as an industry, the best we can do is, you know, accept that this kind of culture war has sadly come to video games, which are, you know, an entertainment medium that we all enjoy. I think the best that we're going to be able to do is, as an industry, come together, denounce it, and, you know, kind of move on. And, you know, I think a lot of these problems will be solved by simply hiring more women. That's how you solve all of this.
Well, on that note, Brianna, good luck to you, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
Brianna Wu, an American video game developer. She founded Giant Space Cat, an indie development studio in Boston, Massachusetts. Noah Berlatsky, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And he's a contributing writer to The Atlantic. And Chris Grant, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's the editor-in-chief of Polygon.com, owned by Vox Media. This hour of Radio Times, produced by our intern, Quinn Libson. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out how to download a podcast of the show. You can also check us out on Twitter and Facebook. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.